Oh, that was an odd sound. Like a whale moaning. What a downbeat opening to the Scratch This podcast, where we discuss that the
philosophical approach. Huh?
Yeah, but it's slightly depressing.
Yeah, join us every week now on the Scratch This podcast extra, where we're gonna have philosophical deep debates. You can join us with over an open fire,
ranging from Immanuel Kant to Aristotle.
And join us with a glass of whiskey, a cigar, and some soothing jazz music as you take your video game knowledge to a more sophisticated level.
Look at this, the back of the thing's holding off.
And just
thus
like this,
thus disproving that's never going to happen.
Yeah, there we go. This week on the show, obviously, it's a big one if you entered into our competition to win a £10 game voucher.
Were we allowed to enter?
No.
No, okay. No. I won't enter right now then.
And obviously, you know, we're not like, this isn't like a thing we've done with game. We're just like, we're going to go out, buy a voucher and send it to you.
Give something back to you, the listeners.
Yeah. On top of that, we'll be looking at, because it was Valentine's Day 3 days ago. We'll be looking.
And did you do anything nice for sure?
Yeah, we went and had a meal at Coriander, which is a Mexican restaurant.
I've been there before. It's very nice.
I really like it.
Yeah, it's good.
And then, did you do anything with Sophie? Sorry, I'm really, you can tell, I'm trying to click into gear here.
Well, because our little flat doesn't have any tables or chairs, we eat our dinners off the coffee table. And because I was a bad boyfriend, and I was like 2 days before Valentine's Day, I was like, oh shit, I've not booked anywhere. And everyone's going to be really, like, really busy and not have any reservations. I went all out, went down to Argos, bought the cheapest little table and chair set they had, weighed a fucking ton, dragged that back up, built it, made a little table and chair, then cooked her a meal. And so when she came home, I had all the lights off and the candles, I had this table set up, and treated her to the meal.
Was it a bargain bucket from KFC?
No, it was carrot and something soup, and then steak, well, posh steak and chips.
you had to clarify that, not steak and chips. Posh steak,
well,
and chips.
Steak with balsamic vinegar and dry red wine sauce.
Oh,
stuff like that. Yeah, it's quite nice.
Very
nice, Callum.
And sautéed potatoes, actually. So
there you go.
For the listeners wondering what I did Valentine's, I had a date with Short Hands
and James Hibbard.
And your right hand.
Yeah. Left hand. Yeah. Me and James Hibbard had a nice fish and chip supper. That was about it.
So anyway, let's just plow on into the podcast now. We'll talk about what we've been playing, because this week I think there's a nice diverse range of gaming. Callum, you came in here, you were like, oh, I've got a great idea for the podcast. You don't sound like that, I'm sorry. I don't know where that came from.
I thought you had some kind of recording with me then.
No. you said you've got an anecdote for us, so now it's your chance to regale us.
Are we going straight in with games of the week? Right?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. No, it's not the anecdote-related one, but I think I have to mention Rock Runners, a little app I've been addicted to over the week. I reviewed it for Pixel Bedlam, and I gave it 9 out of 10, so you can tell I really liked it. And then me and Rory from the site have had a kind of little battle going on where he downloaded it to try and put me down, because at one point I was number 2 in the world on one of the levels, and he thought, right, I'm going to beat that. And so we've had a little challenge going on. I'm still ahead of him. I think I'm like 17th in the world now out of like 10,000 whatever, so it's not too bad. And I'm just addicted to that. It's like a kind of little runner platform game where, you know, you're jumping, swinging, building momentum. It's really fun. But my main little story here, it basically sums up everything wrong with Xbox Live. I was playing up my team, as you do. I've, you know, got a bit of an addiction to it.
I can already see where this is going, and I like the sound of it.
And I've in my new team, I bought AC Milan, Balotelli, and Antonio Di Natale up front, and they're very good. Loving them. And I played this guy. It was the Division 1, so you normally face gold teams. We had a silver pace team, so it had a Bong Lahore, Miachi, some other people in there.
So basically, for people who don't play Ultimate Team, a lot of players who are very, very fast.
Very, very fast, because Ultimate Team, you can kind of abuse this by like just playing through balls, those players will always be faster than the defenders, so just one mistake from the AI of the defenders and you can capitalise on it. And it was a very close game. Like the first half was something like 2-2, and then Balotelli and Ronaldinho decide to turn up, kick up shit, and I was 6-3 up. And you know, a couple of the goals are rebound goals, but you know, bearing in mind I was 6-3 up, I was doing well. And then he doesn't move. I'm thinking, oh, okay, you know, lots of people do this where they can't be bothered to play anymore. They'll just put the controller down, go for a scream or something, and then
let the match finish itself off, yeah, so they don't lose their like modifier.
But now I hear the bloop, the little mess thing. He sent me a message, and I will read these messages out, but I just want to show you guys first, so our listeners can try and gauge what it is on their reaction, and you might have to edit it when I'm reading it aloud. Don't say anything. I'll just show it to you. This is what I got at 6-3. So I'll read them out now. So at 6-3, and I got a message from him saying, luckiest die. And so I was like, well, you're clearly pissed off. So I thought at this point I was going to wind him up. Initially I just replied saying, deal with it. And then so every time I got the ball, I did the little like skill pass, you know, when you RB and pass it. Yeah. And then I was scoring two goals. I was like walking the ball into the net and doing a little skill pass into the net. And then every time I scored, I was giving it the shush, running around, replaying all the replays. So I was just rubbing this in. 10-3.
Oh my God.
I then get...
So was he at that point then, was he just still not playing or...?
No, he was playing. He was playing. Right, okay. After sending his message, he continued playing. And then, so it was 10-3 and he said, die you... I hope you drop dead.
Okay, he's. You can sort of see like a through light. Like you can see his logic behind the insults here. He clearly does not want you to be alive.
There's a running narrative on the go.
Yeah.
So, you know, I obviously winning 10-3, and I was getting this, and then I reply. I think I replied saying something like, "Well, someone clearly doesn't like losing," and he says, "Nah, not to lucky virgin with shit goals."
So, it's got a point, mate. You are both lucky
and the apparently.
So
and then
this is gonna be...
And then look, I'll just show you that from here. He's kicking off big style.
What are you, 25?
I'm just showing around the message because there's lots of capitals and exclamation marks in there, so I don't think the anger of the message can truly be portrayed by my voice. But
oh, that's brilliant.
Oh, dear.
He then takes a dislike to me, so he's obviously started looking through my profile. He says, ha, 73 keeper, you c-. That's the fact that he conceded 10 goals. When he was like lucky, I was like, I scored 10 goals, they can't have all been lucky.
Yeah.
48,000 gamer score. Aha, get a social life, g-. What, you 25 or summon? You're a sad man. 48k gamer score. So sad. Go out, you loser.
Loser.
And then I didn't reply to that. And then he just went, oh, retrieving message. Fine. WWE, pinball, Guitar Hero, fuck me, lol, hi, geek. And then I decided not to reply to this, but I had a little think about it.
I love the way he's like, he's gone through your gamer history. He's just gone, ah, you play Guitar Hero, nerd.
And it got me thinking, the really sad thing about this is, like, the reason I've got 48,000 gamer score, it might sound like a lot, but you consider I've had an Xbox for 7 years,
yeah,
from 2005, and about 25,000 of that came from, like, the first 2 years where I used to love gamer score, and then it's kind of petered off. But I was thinking, 7 years, okay, I reckon this guy's about 12 or 13. So the reason I've got that much more gamer score than him is when I unlocked my very first achievement, he was 5 or 6.
Probably.
So and he was still like... struggling with reading and writing, and I started clocking up my gamer score, and then I'm getting shit from him.
There's sort of like a line on Xbox, I think. Obviously, like, on the one hand, trash talking is sort of part and parcel, and to an acceptable degree...
Yeah, well, I wrote that for our little blog, you know, the little post where... I missed the days of the first Gears of War 1 where a rank match, it wasn't just like a rolling thing. Each match was separate and each match lobby was separate. And so you'd get into it and you'd wait for a full thing and you could hear everyone else speaking. And you kind of, okay, sometimes there'd be a bit of trash talk, but it would kind of have that little trash talk, the little rivalry. and the talking where you get to know someone and it kind of made killing them all the more sweeter. And then once
that made you sound slightly sociopathic. I know you, so now I enjoy your murder.
But it's not just like a little avatar, it's actually a player. And then once you've died, you go into a separate lobby than the people in the game, so you can't communicate with them, and you're in the lobby with everyone else that's died. It's just, oh my god, I can't believe you. And it's just that nice little banter you get going.
I think there's sort of levels of trash talking, like when it's sort of getting to the point there where he's
clearly got a psychotic problem.
He's, as you said though, he's probably 12 or 13, and like when you're that age, it's like, oh god, I hate him. Oh, I'm losing 10-3, so I'm good. You're clearly a nerd, that's why you're so good at this game. But yeah,
it's the logic. Anyone worse than me is a noob, anyone better than me is a nerd.
So on that note, Matt,
you can't follow that.
I can't follow that up. I played Four Words, One Picture, and it's all right. It was like annoying sometimes because some of the pictures are really bad and they make no sense. And
can you explain this game? I've never heard of it.
Basically, there's four pictures on the screen, and you get given like 12 letters, and you have to make the word which all the pictures match. Something really easy. There'd be a picture of like I think the easiest one was there was two pictures of a crane, and then two pictures of the bird crane. So it was clearly crane. But then some of them were ridiculously hard. There was like people throwing their hats up in the air and then a thermometer, and it was degrees, and I was like, fucking ridiculous. But I can't trash talk anyone on it.
No. Yeah. Well, apart from your mate Matt Smith, who was down last night.
Yeah, he's like on, like, he's already overtaken me in the mountain. He's already sold as well.
Oh god.
But yeah. But it's not. It was. Yeah. It's a game.
It's a fun little time. Yeah.
Exactly.
I was just going to say, it seems like you have neglected gaming for ways of passing the time. Like, you're like, oh, I've got no time to play Skyrim, but you'll sit and play Temple Run for hours on end.
It's just like, I could easily sit down and play Xbox, but then I think, okay, I'd have to sit down and I'd have to invest time in it. And I think, what can I do now? Well, I should do some work on it, but I'll just have a quick Temple Run. It's just easy, isn't it?
And to be fair, they are still technically, like, mobile games. At the moment, I've kind of grown up with saying the word app, and I now sort of start saying mobile games, because I think, at the end of the day, like, I've probably played Temple Run 2, like, the hours I've probably clocked on that have been on more than, like, some of the Xbox arcade games I've downloaded, DLC packs.
I know it goes back to something we've talked about in multiple previous podcasts, but that's why I think part of the reason, let's say, the PS Vita isn't doing as well as if it would have launched 6 or 7 years ago, is that, you know, mobile gaming is a very viable and large market, and lots of good games there, and they're very fun.
That wasn't scripted. I'm incredibly thankful you brought that up, because now we can just like neatly segue into what I've been playing this week. At the moment, I'm currently in the process of playing a game for Pixel Bedlam called Rocket Birds, the Hardboard Edition, and
for
PS Vita.
Yep.
So, it started life as a flash game. It won I think it was in the final for like the Flash Game Awards in 2010, and since then there's been a Steam version, a PS3 version, and now the PS Vita version. And I'm kind of at the moment I'm pretty sure I'm on the last level of the game. I've reached the final boss. I won't comment on it too much at the moment. I'll save that for the review. Although, as the game goes on,
you sum it up like what it's all about.
Yeah, it's a platformer adventure in the mould of, say, Bionic Commando or Shadow Complex, although it's 2.5D, so it's all on one plane, but the way some of the graphics are made, it makes it look like it's got depth.
Do you say Shadow Complex?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like Shadow Complex, or it'll like in a different way, like Little Big Planet. But I'd say, like, obviously, it reminds me a lot of old SNES or NES games, like, as I said, Bionic Commando or maybe even Contra. Like, I've not played those games enough to like know them inside out, but you know, when you see a 2D side
screen,
you know what it is. And it's got a nice retro feel to it, but it's kind of tonally inconsistent. So the story goes, you play Hard Boiled, who's a chicken taking on a penguin army, and now you'd be right to like sort of smirk, because it's really silly, and you know, some of the dialogue as well is like kind of tongue-in-cheek sort of things. But then you get these music videos and story clips which treat the game incredibly seriously. Like within the third mission, you know, your main character's getting tortured, and he's getting tortured, and he's flashing back to when he was like still inside his egg and being, like, boiled, and he survives it. And then you get, like, these chickens being captured by penguins and being, like, being forced to fight for the penguin army. And it goes to some really dark places fairly early on in the game. And you're sort of playing it, and you're thinking, like, I'm playing a game where a chicken is going around killing penguins, and it's got communist overtones and all these, like, really dark scenes. So it's weird playing it, like, and it is, like, the actual gameplay itself is fun. The story's a bit all over the shop, but you're not playing it for the story.
I guess the most important thing is, if it is a 2.5-3-year-old game now coming out on Vita, does it make use of the Vita's touchscreens or anything?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, there's nothing in there that feels majorly gimmicky. I think it mainly uses the tilt function, so you can sort of look at the level a little bit better. So if you tilt your screen down, the camera itself will tilt up. Oh,
that's quite cool.
If you tilt it to the right, it actually pans out and gives it more of a 3D effect.
That's quite cool, yeah.
So that's kind of cool. And then when you've got grenades or brain bugs, which are probably like the coolest little thing in the game, where you chuck a brain bug and it will jump up and it will basically let you take control of an enemy. And it's only really used for puzzles. So you're locked in a room, you've got to control someone outside of the room who goes off and does something for you. But to get the trajectory for the throw, you actually use the rear touchpad.
Oh, okay.
But I wouldn't say, like, let's say it came out on something like, I don't know, the 3DS, and it wasn't using the touchscreens there. Like, I don't think you'd be missing a great deal if you didn't have those. But they're sort of like the nice little add-ons, which are there if you want to
make
use them.
Make it unique for the platform.
Yeah. The only other thing with this one as well is that you can play it online, and you take control of commandos. This is something which is unfortunate for my review. I don't know anyone with a PS Vita. I have no friends on my friend list who will have the game or have a PS Vita. So I can't really play the multiplayer.
Well, you're more than well, on Twitter there, if there's any of our listeners that just happen to have that game
on the PS Vita. Add me on any fancy game, because, like, at the moment, it's a shame that it doesn't have options so you can play with anyone across the world. It is just only with people on your friends list. But so I can't really comment on that. But, I mean, graphically, it looks really good. Like, for what must be, for what is an indie game, like, the graphics are really, really nice. Very sharp, and it's got its own, like, sort of art style, which it works. Like, it looks pretty silly, and I think that's probably, I sort of wish the story was kind of in keeping with the tongue-in-cheek thing.
Yeah.
But, no, it's, like, I've rambled on a little bit here, but at the moment, I'd lean more towards recommending it, but I still got to finish that off this fucking boss battle. And that's as much as you're going to hear from me about that when I'm still in rage mode with it.
I was talking about raging. This is a nice little segue. Yeah.
Oh, we've done it again.
One final thing I was playing this week is I had a bit of a Dead Space session yesterday. And I do, like, obviously with the second and third game out, I'm still on the first. So I do really, really like Dead Space. It's, like, hugely atmospheric and stuff. But it does realise that there is such a one problem I have with it. I don't know, Matt, if you found this. But it's a survival horror game at core, where it's, you know, the open map, ammo's limited and stuff. But every so often, it'll just turn into a shooter game, and it just doesn't work. It's frustrating. So there's a bit where, you know, you get locked in a room, and you just kind of get wave after wave of necromorph just trying to fight you. And that's, to me, it's annoying, because I want these things to be shit scary and stuff. But then they just turn into an annoyance, and I just get frustrated by, like, trying to kill them. And say that this room, I end up just, like, running around in circles trying to pick up health packs and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's not what the gameplay should be like at all. But I just thought I'd say that, really.
Yeah. No, like, that's sort of, like, what's going on in the final battle at the moment in, what I think is the final battle. But
what you hope is the final battle.
Yeah, well, at the moment it's getting to hoping. But it's a shame, because, like, the first few missions are, like, really good, like, nostalgia, like, sort of playthrough. Anyway, it's time to move on to our news section. So we're back, and we're on to our news section, and I think this week will probably be a little bit shorter than usual, because we'll start off with Aliens Colonial Marines. Now, this sort of bit comes with a disclaimer in the fact, like, none of us have played it yet, So in terms of our opinions, we can only go off.
We're going by what other people have said.
Well, what the
majority of reviewers are feeling.
Yeah, it's not just like we met some guy down the street. Yeah, it's like, it's a really bad game.
We, you know, we do view their professional opinion highly, so we trust and we'll follow their opinions in to discuss this feature, because I feel it's newsworthy in itself.
Well, let's go off, like, I say the news angle here is that Aliens Colonial Marines is on, I think, 52 on Metacritic.
Right.
Hang on, I'll get up just to be absolutely 100% certain in that. Okay, at the moment, for Xbox it's on 50, and on PC it's on 42 on Metacritic. So,
and that's the critical score, not user score or anything.
That's critical score, and that's not the user score. The user score for Aliens on the Xbox is 4.0. So if anything, it's...
the user score should always be taken with
a massive pinch
fresh
of salt.
Bag of salt.
I mean, you know,
The fact that, again, I say it, it's been one of those games that kind of, it was teased like in 2007 or something, like, you know, years and years ago, and then just kind of fell off the radar, and then there'd always be these kind of previews and nothing really substantial, and it's like sad in the fact that the first previews and the first screenshots, you know, the first news, you're like, this has got the potential to be an amazingly, amazingly good game, and then Aliens vs. Predators came out, and everyone's like, oh, it's a bit crap, but, you know, the Aliens Colonial Marines game is going to be very, very good.
Well, with Aliens versus Predator, I remember, like, most people being like... I mean, I went round my mate's house, we played it, like, we had an evening on it, and I've always thought, like... And I played it at work a little bit as well, like, I had a few hour lunch breaks with it. I think, like, one or two. I thought it was decent.
It was all right. I played the multiplayer demo, and I didn't rate that at all, but... You know, we're thinking, you know, this Aliens Colonial Marines is going to be really good. You know, it's going to recapture the horror from the film and the fact that you'll be locked in this spaceship and there's going to be aliens wandering around, and apparently it just does not live up to that at all. And it's highly disappointing.
I mean...
Well, I have a question. How, should these game companies keep... I'm not going to rehash, probably harsh word, bringing out these... these chains of games, you think, just lay it to rest and try and come up with a new idea, or is it so hard to come up with a new idea? And the potential for money because of the fact it's like a name, is that always going to...
I mean, do you want me to go, or do you want to go?
Well, just in my opinion, you just have to look at the film industry and look how most horror films are remakes, and nearly every superhero has been rebooted two or three times already. And it is that kind of balance where... You know, you do want to make fresh games, and I think the Alien franchise does offer enough premise to make a really fantastic, fresh, good survival horror. And it's also the fact that, you know, the people making these games aren't cheap at all. They cost tens of millions of dollars, if not more. And so the people making them do want, you know, trust in the fact that they will get return on their investment.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not surprising that, obviously, a studio like Bungie, which... massive reputation, they probably do have the creative freedom to come up with something completely new and fresh, but you can imagine that a lot of publishers probably do prefer, you know, they'd prefer putting money into a new Call of Duty than a new something else entirely, because it's got less risk involved in it. I'm just kind of
I mean, for me personally, I tend to feel like it's easier to pick out, like, the mistakes, or, like, Hollywood's, like, creatively null and void. And with games, I think with Aliens, they sold it that it was a sequel to the movie. Like, it was, you know, Alien 3 sort of took the franchise off in a different sort of direction, and Aliens was going back to, like, you know, what happens when the cleanup crew comes. But in terms of, at the end of the day, we've said this on the podcast, like, time and time again, you know, gaming is a business, and when it comes to Aliens, you know, there's a massive market for it. You only need to see the fact, like, how the world got so geared up for Prometheus, or, you know, like, I'm pretty sure, like, the majority of Alien products, like, they'll always end up making a killing. There is an audience there for them, And, you know, you've got to think...
You'd be surprised if the game didn't sell well, yeah, even despite the critical consensus.
The first few weeks on sale, there'll be plenty of people go, okay, like, it's not got great reviews, but I love Aliens, and, you know, maybe
I'm
I'll like
to
it.
Gloss over mm. the...
Yeah, they'll probably gloss the it six, over.
Yeah.
Well, but maybe that can work vice versa as well, because they're so, like, in tune with the whole like, idea of Aliens, and the game hasn't lived up to their standards. It could still be an easily playable game.
And then, exactly, and I think if you look at a new idea... You know, you've got to think at the end of the day, well, we can make an Aliens game, which we've got the license for. If we don't make a game for it, we lose the license. Or we can, like, try something new. And imagine if this was a new game, but it sort of... Let's say it was just sort of called something else entirely. It didn't have any connection to the Aliens universe, but same sort of premise, you know. Alone on a ship, being hunted down.
Dead Space.
And we've made Dead Space. But, yeah, like, I can imagine then, like, people might even be more, like, critical of it. Or they might be more lenient towards it. You just can't tell.
From like the things I've read, is the main letdown is that it never truly feels like you're being hunted by aliens on the ship, because the alien character AI just isn't there at all. Mm. So it's not the fact that it's an Aliens game that means it's not as good as it possibly should be. It's, you know, the core faults that would be the same no matter what you called it or dressed it up as. So
the problem is, like as you said, sort of 6-7 years in development. You know, I remember, I think back in like second year of college, seeing it on the mag, like the front cover.
Yeah, and every time it looked really good. It's this massive hype train that.
Yeah, I suppose the longer it waits as well, the more like you anticipate, and you just you take like the smallest fault, and because it's been so long in development, it kind of amplifies it.
Okay, so I think we can leave Aliens Colonial Marines for a little bit, because I mean, it's. I don't think... I might pick it up if I've got time over the summer, but like this is not going to surprise anyone who listens to the podcast. We've all got a massive back catalogue of games we sort of want to work through and play through.
From the looks of it, I reckon that's going to, not even first-hand, second-hand, it's going to be like under £20, under 15 in the sales very soon, so...
Yeah, I could imagine it going down by the time... Well, not by Easter, but certainly like by the summer, it could be quite cheap. It looks like it might be a decent enough rental for a weekend if I've got nothing else to play. So, yeah, moving swiftly on towards... we'll keep this one nice and brief. This week, there's been photos leaked of the PlayStation 4 controller. If you haven't seen them... Google, you'll find it quickly.
It's 2013, I'm not going to tell you how to find things on the internet.
But basically, the main addition to the controller was a Vita-like touchpad on the front of the controller. The D-pad now has the arrow keys sort of... On the PS3 and PS2 controller, each four of the buttons are separated, whereas in this one, they're sort of together in one like almost big button, but obviously still... imagine the Xbox D-pad without like the little webbing between it, and a Move like sensor built into the top of the controller. So from a personal standpoint, we'll be talking about this a lot more in depth next week, because the Sony event, when they put up the future. That's February the 20th.
I'm maybe just saying now.
Maybe they're gonna name a new Pope.
Maybe. It will come out with the new controller.
Yeah, that's what Pope Benedict's been doing all along.
Do you think Sony are the ultimate trolls in the fact that, see the future, they're going to announce a new controller, but it's going to be this generation as well? Like, the controller will work with the PS3 rather than releasing the PS4. I don't think it'll happen.
It's fairly obvious that it will be
a starting to release videos like, oh, this is PS1. Mm. PS2 is the best-selling console
They've been really clever. It's building up to it, and I think it's better for like Sony to do this now. Like E3, it'll get buried, and I wouldn't be surprised in a month's time we see Microsoft doing something similar.
I'd love to see Microsoft on the 19th announce their console out when they were just...
Yeah, and this is what happened. In theory, that could happen. I mean, like, you know, Sony made such a big deal about it. If you did it sort of like a stealth press release, it sort of takes a shine off Sony's. But the controller itself, Callum, you weren't a fan?
No, like, I think it's kind of cool concept and stuff, but from a personal point of view, in the way I like to game, I'm not a fan of implementing all these gimmicky things. Just, I personally really, really like the Xbox controller, because it's just really ergonomic, fits in your hand well. I've gotten used to it, so I can't use PlayStation controllers anyway. and it's just kind of, I just want to press buttons and play games, not have little touch pads or moves and stuff.
I mean, I would, I'm sort of in a halfway like house here. Like, the controller itself, it depends how like gimmicks are used, because I mean, you could say that the Wiimote was a gimmick at the time, but like,
and I could never have a Wii as a main console.
I think, obviously, you know, they did, like, when they brought out the classic controller, that was, like, a concession to people who didn't want to use it. I still, like, I don't see the Wiimote as a gimmick. I still, like, I liked using it. I don't think it was... I think it's very easy for people to bash it because the like, the games that came out for the Wii ended up, like, I'd say 40% were just, you know, tie-ins towards the end of its life. And it gets easier to bash the games when the majority of games were, like... shake this or do that. Yeah. But when you had games like Super Mario Galaxy that made it work, and or Resident Evil 4, I actually thought the best version of that was on the Wii. Like, I really liked playing it on that one. I like played it on the PS2. I don't think I finished it on the Wii, but I got like fairly far into it.
I think my points are, like, as you say, you know, there's no bashing Nintendo's first party games at all, you know, the Zelda, Mario and stuff, but obviously, the Skyward Sword, you can't really say as much because it's the one-to-one motion control. I'd happily play any of those games just on a controller.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
I would play them on a controller, but I think the main point I'm trying to get here is like, at the moment, it does look like Sony are chucking a lot of things at it. If it works, then it will look like genius. But if not, as you said, it will just come across as gimmicky.
It's like, has the PlayStation Move or the Kinect worked as well as either Sony or Microsoft would have hoped?
Yeah, that's a difficult question. I, personally, having had the Kinect, I kind of like it for the fitness stuff I'm doing at the moment, but I haven't had a chance to play, like, games with it outside of, like, voice recognition stuff in FIFA.
Yeah, I don't, like, it's still, from what I've seen, there hasn't been, like, a revolution.
It's still kind of, like, a little corner of the thing rather than really integrating itself. Into
and especially with Move as well. Like, again, I played Sports Champions on it on my final shift at game because, like, it came out just as about, we were about to go to university in the first year, and we, like, went upstairs and had a night, like, messing about on it. And, it was fun, but, again, that one felt more like the Wii because of the fact it was more like, it was the remotes. But, yeah, we'll have a lot more on the future of PlayStation on next week's podcast, and now we're going to move...
Well, do we ask what Matt thought about the controller?
No, we didn't.
Well, like I said, I've only seen it. I don't know what's good. I don't mind so much so if it's just used for small bits or an inventory kind of system or stuff like that. But as long as it's not like the focal point of its controller.
I mean, at the moment though, like, you realise it's a touchpad, not a touchscreen.
Yeah, touchpad. Yeah, yeah.
But like,
so it won't show anything. Yeah.
But like, as long as it's not like as long as it's not detrimental that it has to be there in forward and use control.
Yeah.
But I'm not either of there. It's a controller with a touchpad. Yeah. I'm not. It's not going to like deter me from possibly buying a PlayStation. Or it's not going to sway me.
Yeah. Anyway, now let's move on to our little feature this week.
Yeah.
There's no time for your iPhone now, young Callum.
Well, when it's back here. When it's Twitter stuff, I'll just retweet in the thing.
We're back on, though. Oh, dear. Matt, it looks like... Oh, you're on your phone as well.
Twitter notifications keep popping up. Oh. I'll be out of the loop.
Well, we're back in the loop on the podcast. This week, we thought, on honour of Valentine's Day, we'd do a little romantic feature about games. So we'll just, like... Gonna have a little chat about romances we wish we'd seen happening in games. And Matt, you can start off this one.
Well, it's not so much a romance I really want to see, but I would have just liked to. Like, I could have just, if it was like a show, I could have watched it all day long. Like the whole Ezio, Da Vinci kind of, the bromance that was going on. Like, I was just considering he's just a side character that helps develop not even the plot, but just helps develop the kind of experience you can have in the game in terms of his inventions and stuff. He's a really good character, and the whole, like, I mean, he got his own DLC where he literally is this damsel in distress who gets kidnapped, and he's like, oh, sorry, Ezio, but the dude's in, like, another easily climbable castle.
Yeah.
And, but the kind of, the dynamic...
Is that a subtle reference to a game there? I can't tell.
I thought I just came out of my head, I'm not sure. But, yeah, like, the whole just dynamic of the two is really, like, entertaining and whatnot, and I could happily, like, obviously, they brought out, is Embers, the little, like, the animation film they brought out at the end of Brotherhood, Embers or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, they could, and it's basically how, like, it was the end of, like, Ezio was, like, he went on to live in this farm and how he, like, passed. Obviously, it's got nothing to do with the games. But,
yeah.
But if they'd done something like that, just a little side series with Da Vinci and Ezio, I could
watch it. He went to live on a farm with Da Vinci.
Yeah, something like that. But, like, you know, like, the whole dynamic worked well that I could watch and just enjoy the interactions.
Yeah. And, I mean... sort of following on from that, I would say exactly the same thing for Uncharted with Drake and Elena Fisher. I always like... oh, pardon me. Yeah. Like, in the games, you never really got to see them... Like, you always saw them, like, sparring with each other and had that whole, like, Indiana Jones female companion vibe of, like, banter back and forth until they fall for each other. But you never really got, like... I think it's between either the first and second or second and third game, like, they sort of... you can tell they've had a relationship and they've had to break it off for whatever reason. I'm pretty sure it's the third game, and their characters just work really well together, but you don't really see them spend that much time together in the games, like, in general, outside of the first game. So you sort of get this feeling like you could easily watch their, like, quick witty chatbacks for, like, it would work really well on a TV series, like half an hour adventure with those two bickering each other. But yeah, you never really got to spend that much time with them as a couple. But on the flip side of that, you did get to spend time with Drake and Sully, which was probably just as good, if not slightly better, because everyone knows that behind every good man is a great mustache, and Sully has a superb mustache. So you can't...
Surely it's slightly in front of everybody.
Slightly
man.
In front of everybody, yeah. Man. Just missed it there. But, yeah, so I thought that was a... I would like to have seen that pairing. But outside of that, I could go for days with great romantic pairings in games you never really get to see come to fruition.
Mine's... It kind of come to fruition in the game, but with Matt, I'd like to see it explored further in... spin-off and or miniseries and or sitcom, and that is Shepard and Garrus. Garrus, you know, it wasn't like, because he was he was an infiltrator, I think.
Are you saying though, here you have to talk about, are you talking female Shepard or male Shepard?
It's a bromance, male Shepard.
It doesn't necessarily, this is an article, isn't just about bromances, or would you just want the bromance one?
No, I'm just saying the bromantic relationship. If Matt can have a bromance...
Yeah, I'm not saying you can't have a bromance. I was just wondering which one you want to go for.
Oh, yeah, male Shepard, sorry.
Okay.
Obviously, I didn't include the first name because Shepard doesn't have a first name. He's got the name that you choose him to have. So
unless it's... Is it John
Jack,
or...
It's Jack.
Oh, mine is it John Shepard.
John Shepard, is it John? Is it John Jack?
Oh, I don't know the female one, though.
No, neither do I. No.
But awful human beings for not knowing that.
But, well, that's because I always just delete it and choose my own. So he's Callum Shepherd to me. And so it's Shepherd and Garrus, because I've always had this, like, romantic connection with Garrus and the fact that he's an infiltrator. He's got a sniper rifle and he's got overload for the shields, which is useful. But it's not like, you know, because he's a bit of both. He's not necessarily always the best person to have in your party. But I'd always choose him, no matter what the mission, no matter what the circumstances were. Even if it was a character mission where you had to have someone else, you couldn't pick that one. I'd always do Garrus as well, because I'd love the little lines you get back and forth. Like, I know Mass Effect 1 got slated a lot because it would replace the loading screens with elevators.
Yeah.
But in these elevators, depending on who your characters were, they'd have, like, little chatter back and forth. I just used to love Garrus's. And so a Shepard and Garrus do build up quite a strong bond throughout the series. And there is this one, it's not really spoiling anything, that in Mass Effect 3, you know, once you're off the ship or between missions, if you start to talk to characters more, you can. It's not like the earlier games where you have side missions, but you kind of go through more cutscenes and develop the story a bit more. Do you ever finish Mass Effect 3?
Shokoro Ben buys a game and doesn't finish it.
And
I'm not even sure if I want to go back and finish it. I won't. I love Mass Effect 2, but I really was enjoying Mass Effect 3, but I just struggled to keep interest in it.
But well, as I say, yeah, with Garrus, you know, if you talk to him a bit more and stuff.
Am I right in thinking in Mass Effect 3 there's like a cutscene where you and Garrus go on top of the roof?
Oh, it's not like I was just building that at all. it's not like I was just explaining the fact that if you build your relationship with people, you get cutscenes, you get story development. And it's not like I was just about to say a really nice touching moment. It's the fact that you go to the Citadel and he's like, hey, Shepard, I want to show you part of the Citadel. And then... so you're on this bit and you're kind of shooting things. And this is how much of a bromance, like how much I love Garrus. You know, you're having a little sniper, like firing off with him, and you can choose the option. He throws one up and you can either hit it and win or purposely miss and make him feel good. Like, oh, I always knew I was a better shooter than you.
Yeah.
And I purposely missed because I didn't want to break his heart.
Isn't the purposely miss one like the Paragon one as well?
Yeah, the Paragon one. So.
I was thinking like when you started going off on that, I was sitting there like, is that Mass Effect 2 or Mass Effect 3? I'm sure it's Mass Effect
3. I'm sure
3.
I'm just going to ruin your story.
I didn't really ruin it, though. I'm sorry. I did actually like that in Mass Effect 3. How far was that into the game?
I honestly can't remember.
Like, I remember, like, not being, like... I didn't think I was, like, majorly that far in, but that sort of felt like a nice little... It's definitely, like, halfway through, I think.
Has the Citadel been... Was the Citadel attacked?
Yeah.
Yeah, and... I'm trying to think what you did. What was the last bit you can remember playing?
I think no, I can't remember. I'm not gonna sully this section with ums and ahs. If I'm trying to remember.
Do actually have one more.
Ooh.
It's not really like they spend the whole game together, and they literally do ridiculous things to their bodies to ensure each other's safety, and that is Whiplash.
Yes.
I cannot remember the name of the characters, but the rabbit and the... Is it Meerkat? Or God, I don't know what
is that
like
thing
is.
Banjo-Kazooie?
So it was like... They were
chained together.
Tested,
yeah, they were in a test
together.
Lab, and they tried to break out, and they're, like, attached to each other by chain. And, like, the rabbit, you can, like, blow up the rabbit with air so you can float, or you, like, chuck the meerkat things, like, fires and stuff, just so they can get out together. It was a touching game.
Anyway, I think it's quite nice that this section has now come full circle, so we'll get on to what everyone's been waiting for.
That's a competition.
Yeah. That's a competition. And it is a community interaction segment. And I said that really oddly then as well. I apologise for that. Basically, this is usually when we go through what people have like tweeted at us and stuff like that. But
this week's a special one.
Incredibly special one.
So special we're yawning.
Basically this week we are announcing the winner to our competition. We had more than 5 entries. But we decided that people who knew us in...
Or were us,
that is unfortunately very true. We were basically, people who Bournemouth with us weren't allowed to enter, weren't allowed to win. They could retweet us and follow us, we appreciate that. But, you know, so we've got a list of 5 names here of people who they've been given numbers, and I've got a random.org, which is a random number generator. So I'll go through the names now and the numbers, and we're going to find out who's won. Number 1 is Jake Jones. 2 is Dan Hawkin. 3 is Tom Williams. 4, Brandon D. Murphy. Number 5, James Law. So, Callum, if you'd just like to come round this side. Matt, if you come round here just to make sure that...
Make sure that what?
I'm on, just to confirm for everyone.
This looks like you fixed it so that you win somehow.
I am on random.org. Okay, the minimum number is 1, maximum number is 5. It's number 4, which means that
Brandon
D. Murphy, you've won a £10 game gift voucher. Congratulations, Brandon.
I would very much like to hear an acceptance speech over Twitter.
If you could tweet us your acceptance, we'll be getting in touch soon to get your deets so we can send you some monies. Anyway, but fortunately enough, you know, that it's not over just yet this week. We actually have had someone get in touch with us. Tipperwan, he said, check out the Chrono Blade trigger. Let me know if you're on a beta key.
That's very nice, isn't it?
Yeah, I said Chrono Blade trigger then. I meant to say Chrono Blade trailer. So, Tipperwan there wanted a little bit of promotion. And, you know, if you... we'll pop a link. Well,
if you want to send us free stuff, feel free.
We'll retweet that one. If you want to check out the trailer, by all means, we've put that on our Twitter feed. So go check it out.
And we've actually got a guest
for hopefully the next one.
Next week's podcast.
That's Sean Hogan, who is currently making the Anodyne game.
Anodyne game. Yeah, it's quite an interesting one where instead, you know, this whole thing about piracy being a bad, bad thing. They decided to put, you know, they realised that it's a small indie game, you know, not many people buy it possibly because, you know, with a lack of publishing, marketing force. So they put their game on Pirate Bay for free. They said, look, everyone, we are sharing that file. Go download it for absolutely nothing. If you like it, you can, you know, pay a bit of money on the site afterwards and, you know, you can contribute. But I think it was only 1 week they put it on the Pirate Bay for free. So it's coming down Monday, so by the time you're hearing this, unfortunately, it might not be there anymore. But yeah, that's a nice little touch, and I think it got on the front page of Pirate Bay, and it definitely got to the front page of Reddit and stuff. So, you know, it's that little thing where now with marketing, because the way internet and viral things work, you can be very clever with it and just do something a bit fresh and innovative. That one. And you'll get a lot more exposure than you would previously. And I, you know, just reading through his tweets, and someone said, you know, obviously we'll speak to him more on the podcast, but apparently it's done well. You know, they've done better than if they hadn't given it away for free, which is an interesting point, and hopefully we'll make a good interview.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Anyway, don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, by all means, please do, because we want to hear from you. You can tweet us at ScratchDisc or email us,
estispodcast. So you can say initiative, but you can't say podcast.
Exactly.
It wasn't even initiative.
It was innovative.
Oh, innovative.
estispodcast@gmail.com. We will be back. We'll have a new episode up on Friday, hopefully. This week's is out a bit later. We've only been able to get into the studio on the Sunday. Usually we record on Friday and have it up for you. I wasn't able to book out a studio because I came to book it on the Thursday and it was too late.
To be fair, we wouldn't have made it. I was auditioning for role of Pope anyway, so I wouldn't have made it.
I mean, I was after you, wasn't I? Was I two behind you in the line?
I think it was two, yeah. They kind of stopped the line after they saw me, though. I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I'm pretty sure.
I felt my application failed when it realised that I wasn't in any way, shape or form Catholic or believing in any form of God in any way, shape or form. And that, I know, I've got all the other qualities to make a good Pope.
Anyway, I've been Ben Tyra.
I'm Callum Alexander.
I've been Matt Mace.
We hope you've enjoyed this show. See you next time. Goodbye.